Gracias, gracias, Laurence, y gracias al Constant y al Fundación Antoni Tàpies por invitarme aquí, y gracias a ustedes por venir aquí hoy en este momento de luto. Quiero hablar un poquito del estado de Nuevo México y su población. Nuevo México fue parte del Imperio Español y la República Mexicana en 1848. Los Estados Unidos lo tomaron al fin de la Guerra México-Americana. La mayoría de la población del estado es pobre y también es hispana y se llama así. También se llama Hispanic en inglés, latina, chicana, Mexican American y indio hispana o mestiza. No quiero confundir ustedes con estas calificaciones, pero uso todos en mi ensayo porque y creo que son importantes porque reflejan las historias múltiples de conquista y colonización en Nuevo México. Y mi ensayo se llama Deus Ex Machina, Tradition, Technology, and the Chicano Futurist Art of Marian C. Martinez. Y voy a leerlo en inglés, pero si alguien quiere preguntar algo en español, yo trato de responder en español. In February of 2001, the Museum of International Folk Art in Santa Fe, New Mexico, launched Cyber Arte, an exhibition of visual art that combined the traditional folk art with state-of-the-art computer technology. The show's four artists were all Mexican-American women, and all of them used computers and computer technology to reinterpret what they saw as the traditional. Some of these traditional images, some of these traditional images, ¿dónde está la proyector? There it is, thank you. So some of these images while traditional, offered a very contemporary twist. This is Alma Lopez's Our Lady, and in this work, Alma Lopez, who is from Los Angeles, reinterprets the Virgen de Guadalupe. At the bottom, in place of the angel, we see a young woman bare-breasted with her arms outstretched, and she has short hair as well. Oops. Okay. Lopez is building upon a tradition in Chicana art in which Chicana feminists reinterpret images of the Virgin of Guadalupe. This particular work is by Esther Hernandez. She's from California. And oh no, this is Yolanda Lopez, excuse me. And oops. This one is by Esther Hernandez, also from California, and this one is called La Virgen de Guadalupe Defendiendo los Derechos de los Chicanos. It's from 1976. It's an etching. And here we see two other works by Yolanda Lopez. One is called Margaret F. Stewart, Our Lady of Guadalupe, and the other is Victoria F. Franco, Our Lady of Guadalupe. And in this series, the artist portrays the women of her family as the Virgen of Guadalupe. So Alma Lopez's work, Our Lady, builds upon and contributes to a long and rich tradition of critical reinterpretations of La Virgen de Guadalupe among Chicana feminist artists. Her work upset and offended many New Mexicans, most notably a number of vocal Catholics and Hispanos, because they found it offensive, they found it blasphemous, they were very upset with it. And her work sparked public debates concerning the value and purpose of art, the responsibilities of a public institution to its constituents, and most interesting to me, the parameters of Chicana or Hispana cultural identity in the 21st century. So like Alma Lopez, the visual art of Marian Martinez, one of the other cyber artistas, testifies to the dynamism and malleability of Chicana art and identity. This piece is called Oratorio a la Virgencita, and it's a little box, and inside we see an image of the Virgin of Guadalupe that Martinez has created using circuit boards from inside a computer. Like Alma Lopez, Martinez uses new media to portray longstanding religious icons. Martinez calls herself Indio Hispana, and she was born and raised in northern New Mexico near Los Alamos National Laboratory, which is the birthplace of the atomic bomb and one of the most important nuclear weapons research centers in the United States and the world. Her mixed media sculptures and wall hangings of Catholic images, nine of which were included in Cyber Arte, consist of discarded computer components, some of which the artist has salvaged from a dump at Los Alamos. Using the technologies of the present, Martinez reproduces and transforms traditional Indo-Hispanic art forms, and at the same time underscores New Mexico's history as a dumping ground for the remnants of these technologies. In doing so, Martinez challenges nostalgic and romantic visions of New Mexico as the land of so-called, as the so-called land of enchantment. The tourism industry in New Mexico markets New Mexico as the land of enchantment. Her work also provides new and complex meanings for Hispana cultural identity and cultural production, and offers work emblematic of what I term Chicana futurism. And I will elaborate on this term later on. First, what I'd like to do, though, is talk a little bit about art in New Mexico. I'd like to talk a little bit about the Santo tradition there. So here is a more traditional rendition of the Virgen de Guadalupe. This is a santo, and santos are New Mexico's most scrutinized and highly marketed art forms. New Mexican santos are generally classified into two types, bultos, or figures in the round, sculptures. This one is from the late 18th, early 19th century. And they're also classified as retablos, or panels. And they're usually made of wood and painted with natural pigments. Today, santos may still be found in numerous New Mexican homes, although they are usually made of plaster, tin, or plastic. Beginning in the 1920s, members of Santa Fe's Anglo intelligentsia initiated what they perceived as a revival of the Santo tradition. And by Anglo, I refer to English-speaking whites or European Americans in the United States. They were inspired in part by the arts and crafts and primitivist movements, and they turned to resuscitating what they deemed the traditional arts of New Mexico's native cultures, to preserving them in the face of the drastic technological changes of the early 20th century. And according to the art critic Lucy Lippard, quote, folk art has been defined as art that reflects its surroundings. However, those surroundings are understood to be outside everyday modern urban life, and therefore the objects are valued as artificial bonds to an idealized past, unquote. To many Anglo art patrons in and beyond Santa Fe during the early 20th century, the santos of New Mexican Hispanos became emblematic of pre-industrialization, of primitivism, of a less complicated, more innocent time, place, and people, and of a folk culture deemed to be in danger of disappearing. So in addition to appearing temporally distant, New Mexico's Hispanos have been regarded as spatially remote and physically isolated. A colonial New Mexico was regarded as a lonely outpost of Spanish settlement, the fringes of civilization, and the farthest and most ragged rim of Christendom. And even today, in the post-colonial 21st century, the state is still perceived as both physically and temporally distant from the forces of modernity as represented by capitalism and industrialization. The geographer Laura Pulido argues that New Mexico has been bypassed by the forces of development. And because of this, it has been relatively exempt from the homogenizing forces of modernity. It also carries the illusion of a traditional lifestyle, one that is considered quaint by outsiders. But this lifestyle is the result of poverty. Despite its prominent role in establishing and maintaining the dominance of the so-called free world and its superpower champion, the United States of America, New Mexico remains relatively economically underdeveloped. In fact, it's one of the poorest states in the United States. Now, as various scholars have argued, the logic of colonialism and racism maintains the existence of a spatial temporal spectrum with dark so-called superstitious pre-capitalist peoples occupying one end, and these people are known as the primitive, and white supposedly enlightened capitalist nation states occupying the other end, the modern. As people from modernity, from the metropolis, move to the periphery, they appear to move backwards in time. So as they move from, for example, Madrid to Mexico, they're moving not only in space, but backwards in time, moving to the primitive. By virtue of hailing from, occupying, and representing the periphery, Hispanos, especially poor rural Catholic Hispanos in New Mexico, have been barred from the present and future and fixed in a racialized past. They appear to have changed very little over the centuries and seem to occupy a world older than and separate from the white, capitalist, mechanized, and or digitized world of modernity and postmodernity. In particular, by virtue of being associated with the pre-industrial and pre-digital, they are often deemed incapable of understanding, mastering, or even living with science and technology, which are signifiers of the present and future. Now, generations of Hispanos have lived with science and technology. However, they are often perceived as not being able to use science and technology. They're often perceived as being very technophobic, in fact. Now, New Mexican Hispanos have been excluded from the world of science, technology, and reason by being confined to the domain of superstition, mythology, and intuition. The knowledge of New Mexican Hispanos, of Indians in New Mexico, as well, as often classified as myth, as legend, folk knowledge, as superstition, compared to the knowledge of the scientists at Los Alamos, many of whom are white men. Their knowledge is considered information, data, truth. One observer recently remarked that the community of Los Alamos is an anomaly in New Mexico, not only because it is predominantly wealthy and white in a state that is mainly poor and brown, but because, as she put it, quote, its lifeblood is data, the concrete observable information that is science, while it is surrounded by cultural traditions whose roots are held in place by powerful intuitive mythologies, unquote. Like Native Americans, as well as other people of color and women in general, New Mexican Hispanos, in particular those who do not reside in or come from cities, are reputed to be closer to nature than white people, especially urban, middle, and upper class white men. That is, they are associated with the wilderness as opposed to civilization, with the organic or crude as opposed to the artificial or refined, with the carnal rather than the cerebral, with intuition rather than intellect, and with mythology rather than data. And the illustration that Juan Miguel showed, the medieval illustration of the woman being separate from the ladder, you know, going to heaven, I think that illustration captures the fact that women, like people of color, minorities in the U.S., are often separate from, they're divorced from reason, from rationality, and by extension from science and technology. Now, without a doubt, New Mexico's tourism industry is responsible in great part for manufacturing many romantic myths about the state and its people, about the state's putative temporal and physical distance from the modern world. The tourism industry is also responsible for glossing over, for concealing many of the state's demographic, socioeconomic, and environmental realities. Tourism, as the anthropologist Sylvia Rodriguez has argued, produces, maintains, and markets ethnic and post-colonial identities in colonial or post-colonial situations, that is, in situations in which intergroup relations are asymmetrical and exploitative. The pressures of tourism in New Mexico have fabricated a Hispano-ethnic identity that is by and large Spanish as opposed to Mexican, rural, and of the past. And in the United States, the term Spanish is more palatable for many people than Mexican. The term Spanish is more Eurocentric than Mexican. And there are a number of Hispanos in New Mexico who call themselves Spanish, even though many of them are, you know, they are part Native American, part Spanish, they're mestizos, but they call themselves Spanish in many ways to remove themselves from Native Americans, to separate themselves, to put some distance between themselves and Native Americans. Now, an advertisement in, an advertisement in a vacation guide from New Mexico for Tierra Wolves of Los Ojos, which is a community in northern New Mexico, purports to offer evidence of how little things have changed in New Mexico. In this advertisement, a Hispana surrounded by colorful rugs and balls of yarn and wearing what appears to be 19th century attire, including a lace mantilla atop her head, works at a wooden spinning wheel. And this advertisement is supposed to entice visitors to New Mexico. You know, come see New Mexico, the land of enchantment, where time moves more slowly. We don't change here. We are still of the past. Furthermore, New Mexico's tourism industry highlights the state's scenic landscapes and recreational activities. And New Mexico is a beautiful state. It has magnificent deserts, sunsets, mountains, rivers. It's exceptionally beautiful. Yet in addition to competing with and concealing the state's socioeconomic woes, the image of New Mexico as the land of enchantment obscures its history and current role as a repository for radioactive waste. And New Mexico became such a dumping ground on July 16, 1945, when scientists from Los Alamos National Laboratory detonated the world's first atomic bomb at the Trinity Test Site, which is in central New Mexico. It is also home to the U.S.'s first subterranean storehouse for radioactive waste, located near Carlsbad Caverns, which is a very popular tourist destination. Radioactive and hazardous waste was also deposited from 1959 until the late 1980s at Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque, a city of roughly 500,000 people. It's still stored at Los Alamos National Laboratory. Clearly, science and technology have had a profound impact on New Mexico's physical landscape. Narratives of New Mexico as the land of enchantment, that is, as a place of unspoiled natural beauty, suppress histories of colonial exploitation and racial, ethnic, and class conflict, and displace the state's legacy of environmental transformation and injustice. Now, challenging myths of and about the so-called land of enchantment, Marian Martinez's 9 works in Cyber Arte underscore the effects of science and technology on New Mexico's environment and people. These works are made with computer parts, although some also consist of wood and other materials. Let me see if I can get it right this time. Yes, okay. The Matachines pieces resemble the elaborate headdresses worn by male danzantes or dancers of the Matachines, which is a ritual drama performed on certain saints' days in Pueblo Indian and Hispanic communities along the upper Rio Grande Valley and elsewhere in the greater Southwest. So the Matachines ritual is performed mostly in northern Mexico and the southwestern United States. In northern New Mexico, where Martinez is from, the headdress that dancers wear typically consists of a mitre, like a bishop's hat, from which numerous bright, multicolored ribbons hang. In the four Matachines pieces included in Cyber Arte, Martinez has used circuit boards for the mitres and cleverly replaced the ribbons with wires. And so we see the wires hanging down in the front. Those would be ribbons on the actual headpiece. Beneath each mitre and behind the ribbons lies a second circuit board, which represents the dancer's face, complete with eyes, nose, and mouth. And so you see the nose and the mouth behind the ribbons, which are wires. For approximately the past 20 years, Martinez has incorporated computer parts into her art. She's gathered these parts from friends' basements and garages, as well as from the Black Hole, a dump at Los Alamos National Laboratory. She told a reporter from an Albuquerque newspaper on the eve of the opening of Cyber Arte, quote, among other things, my work makes a stand about recycling technology. Martinez's work points directly to New Mexico's history as a repository for high-tech trash. Moreover, as the only artist in Cyber Arte to use computer hardware as opposed to computer software, with which the other three artists created what were called their digital tapestries, or computer-generated images, such as Alma Lopez's Our Lady. Martinez raises difficult questions about the ways in which we throw away the tools of the information age, many of which are obsolete as soon as they are made available to us, but few of which decompose rapidly or safely. Because she draws inspiration and gathers materials from her surroundings, Martinez describes herself as a folk artist. She was born in Española, New Mexico, during the Cold War on January 24, 1954, and raised in Los Luceros, a small, rural, primarily Hispano community approximately 45 miles from Los Alamos. In an interview that I conducted with Martinez, she stressed that the lab, Los Alamos, has had a profound impact on her family and the people of her community. In addition to providing them with steady jobs, it, she said, quote, broke the isolation, unquote. While such a remark may reinforce stereotypes of New Mexico as remote, off the map, and so on, it also offers a glimpse of the profound impact of Los Alamos on the artist's family and the people of the Española Valley in general. Martinez recalled that the lab proletarianized, urbanized, and anglicized many northern New Mexican Hispanos by replacing the agrarian livelihood upon which previous generations had depended with wage labor and enabling them to forge ties with people outside their communities. However, although it has offered them a modicum of physical and socioeconomic mobility, Los Alamos and the demands of working there have also left many of the people of Los Luceros with less time. Martinez said to me, we're too busy. Quote, we can't make tortillas anymore, unquote. For better and for worse, Los Alamos, she concluded, enabled us, quote, to move away from who we are, unquote. And when she made this comment to me, I thought, well, what does that mean? You know, who is the who we are of the past, and how have we changed? Change is an important theme of much of Martinez's work. Because folk artists' surroundings have changed with time, folk art, Martinez insists, is far from a static category. Martinez's surroundings are filled not only with computer entrails, computer guts, but with bultos and retablos as well. Like folk art in general, Santo production in New Mexico has never occurred in a cultural vacuum, and Martinez's work is evidence of this. It has been influenced by Mexican, European, and Native American art, and by the forces of commerce and tourism. For example, until the late 1920s, the celebrated New Mexican santero, Jose Dolores Lopez, for example, generally finished items that he produced for friends and relatives with house paints. However, the colors, his Anglo patrons in Santa Fe thought the colors were too bright and too gaudy, and so they suggested that he leave his work unpainted in order to give it more of a rustic and ironically traditional appearance. So his Anglo patrons altered what they saw. They thought, well, these bright colors don't look traditional enough, so keep them, you know, keep the wood bare, keep the wood plain. Although Martinez does not consider herself a santera in what she said as the purest sense of what a santera is, I believe her work falls into, draws from, and transforms the already dynamic New Mexican Santo tradition. In terms of content, her pieces are clearly linked to this tradition. They depict holy personages such as El Santo Niño de Atocha and Our Lady of Guadalupe, both of whom are very popular among Catholic Hispanos and New Mexico, and both figures are very prominent in Santo production there. Let's go back to this work, Oratorio a la Virgencita, consists of an oratorio, a box, a wooden box, which dates back to the 19th century. It has carved and painted lunette top and bottom pieces, a typical feature in many New Mexican retablos. And we see the lunette top and bottom pieces in, in this retablo from the 18th, 19th century. We see the lunette piece on the top. These retablos, these old retablos, also often feature carved patterns and designs. In this work, Oratorio La Virgencita, Martinez has replaced the carvings with two rows of embossed copper roses, one on the oratorio's left side and the other on its right. Finally, with its multiple layers of ribbon, cable, and circuitry, the image of the Virgin inside the oratorio resembles what's called a yeso relief, that is, a retablo in which certain elements such as the head, hands, and folds in the garments are built up with yeso to project from the surface of the panel, adding a three-dimensional effect. While some of the materials that Martinez uses have been used by santeros for many generations, such as the 19th century oratorio of Oratorio La Virgencita, many are novel, unique, and unconventional. Nonetheless, in terms of both content and form, I believe her work is clearly situated in the New Mexican Santo tradition. Now, Martinez was exposed to this tradition while she was growing up in northern New Mexico. She grew up near the San Juan Reservation, which is an Indian reservation in New Mexico, and she attended Catholic school at the reservation. She was raised Catholic, and spirituality was and still is an integral part of her life and work. She no longer considers herself Catholic, but she's still very spiritual. And she sees a close connection between human labor and the divine, and maintains that her art is an expression of her love of God and life. While her work comments on the deification of science and technology, it also recognizes that the sacred and divine may be found in the everyday material world, even in objects dismissed as trash. And just as saints, according to Catholic doctrine, mediate between heaven and earth, Martinez's work links science and religion. Some of her works, such as this one here, it's called Jesús con la Cruz. Merge the sacred and quotidian, as well as the organic and inorganic. This wall hanging is made with a combination of wood and computer parts, as well as with fence wire, which represents Christ's crown of thorns, as a symbol of Anglo-American encroachment upon and expropriation of land in New Mexico and the western United States. The fence wire may also be read as a technology of conquest. What's more, the fence wire invokes the technology of New Mexico's burgeoning prison industry. The prison industry is one of the few growth industries in New Mexico, and this is because New Mexico is extremely poor. There aren't many jobs there, but there's a lot of land, and so a number of prisons have been built there in recent years, and they provide low-wage jobs to the people in New Mexico. Christ's profile is made from a circuit board. A disc represents his halo, and the two pieces of wood that constitute his cross are from an old toolbox, appropriate in light of the fact that Christ was supposed to have been a carpenter. With its worn wood and shimmering computer parts, Jesus con la Cruz juxtaposes and bridges what's known as the low-tech, that it's the material and manually assembled, and the high-tech. And the high-tech is generally seen as the cybernetic or the digital. This work also merges the old and the new and past and present. And just as Christ, whom Catholics believe is God made flesh, links the divine and earthly, the Pentium chip at the top of his cross merges the ethereal as cybernetic and material, and the local and the global. Intel, maker of the Pentium chip, owns and operates a plant in Rio Rancho, a suburb of Albuquerque. The chip illustrates that the local is often that which is left behind by larger economic processes. Thus, in the case of New Mexico, the local is sometimes refuse, that is, that which is physically left behind. Like many third world factories that manufacture computers and or computer parts, Rio Rancho's Intel plant helps to sustain the U.S.'s high-tech economy by providing low-tech, meaning low-skilled manufacturing jobs in an economically depressed and vulnerable region where wages are relatively low and environmental protections are relatively lax. The Pentium chip in Jesus con la Cruz locates New Mexico in the global economy, linking it to distant and not-so-distant places where information technologies and subsequently e-waste are produced. E-waste refers to discarded information technology tools, for example, computer parts, monitors, old cell phones. You know, where do these phones go when we throw them away, when we buy a new one? Well, they end up in dumps, usually in the third world. At the same time, the chip, along with the fence wire, speak of local histories of injustice and struggle. So I think this work says a lot about the global and the local, about specific aspects of New Mexican history. It also says a lot about the third world within the first, the fact that New Mexico functions as a sort of third world space within the United States. In addition to locating the divine in both the tangible and intangible, Martinez sees it in men and women and in the masculine and feminine. A self-proclaimed, excuse me, feminist, un momento, por favor. A self-proclaimed feminist, she embraces what she described as the divine feminine within all of us. Like numerous Mexican and Mexican-American Catholics, she reveres Our Lady of Guadalupe and female saints such as Joan of Arc and Thérèse of Lisieux. The latter is the subject of Blessings from the Little Flower, which is a 1998 wall hanging. And there it is. This work is made of circuit boards, fuses, and wire. It is faithful to photographs of the 19th century French mystic in that it portrays her wearing the Carmelite habit. Furthermore, Saint Thérèse, who's also known as the Little Flower, is associated with flowers, specifically roses, like the Virgin of Guadalupe. In Blessings from the Little Flower, she holds a bouquet of roses. Additional roses appear amidst the board's electrical runs. They're not very visible in this particular illustration. I apologize for that. However, one prominent feature that distinguishes Martinez's Saint Therese from more conventional depictions is the label that reads, quote, 700 PCB motherboard, unquote, which appears in the center of her habit, precisely over her womb. In addition to reminding the viewer that this work is composed of 20th century circuit boards, this conspicuous label identifies Saint Therese as a female source of power from which all information or knowledge or wisdom emanates. That is, it identifies her as a sort of motherboard. And as a sort of female deity. Martinez uses the circuit board, the motherboard, to express her spiritual beliefs and her spiritual beliefs to highlight the beauty of the circuit board. At the same time, she demystifies this object. Like the Holy Eucharist, which is stored behind the walls of the tabernacle in a Catholic church, the circuit board is usually hidden inside a computer shell and seems to function in complicated and mysterious ways. The majority of computer users probably never see the circuit boards that sit atop their desks, nor do many of us understand the ways in which they work or give much thought to where they go when we throw them away. I, for one, computer technology might as well be magic for me because I do not comprehend how it works exactly. In fact, the only people who have much opportunity to see circuit boards, to see and handle circuit boards, are those who design, build, repair, or salvage them. With some exceptions, such as the women who assemble computers or sift through dumps in search of their parts, most of these people are probably men. And even though many women, especially in the third world, build and recover circuit boards, those who truly understand how they function, that is, those who design or repair them, are often men. Thus, the circuit board, like science, technology, and institutionalized religion in general, is masculine. Similarly, the Santo tradition is very masculine, the Santo tradition in New Mexico. As a santera, that is, as a woman producer of santos, Martinez transforms and disrupts this tradition, one long dominated by men. Likewise, as a self-described Indio Hispana who actively works with computer components and finds use value and beauty in e-waste, she challenges the myth of technophobia as applied to women and to people of color in the United States. Y la calificación people of color en los Estados Unidos, la gente de color en los Estados Unidos es mexicanos, latinos, afroamericanos, asiáticos y indios. What I'd like to do at this point now is talk a bit about the concept of Afrofuturism and the concept of Chicana futurism. In recent years, scholars in African American studies have closely examined the relationships of African Americans to science and technology via the concept of Afrofuturism. According to Alondra Nelson, Afrofuturism, quote, reflects African diasporic experience and at the same time attends to the transformations that are the byproduct of new media and information technology. It excavates and creates original narratives of identity, technology, and the future, and offers critiques of the promises of prevailing theories of technoculture, unquote. Like African Americans, many people of Mexican descent in the U.S., in particular Indios and Mestizos, have been barred from Western definitions of the human and denigrated as, to use Paul Gilroy's term, infrahuman or subhuman. They too have been excluded from and or objectified by discourses of science. So on the one hand, these people are excluded from the domain of science, technology, reason, and rationality, and at the same time, we've been objectified by it. And there have been a number of instances in the history of the United States and Western Europe in which people of color have been objectified by science. And one example is the example of Sarah Bartman, the so-called Venus Hottentot, who was exhibited as a freak in the early 19th century in France and England, and then whose genitalia, whose body parts, ended up at the Museum of Man in Paris. And she was considered a kind of specimen of black female sexuality. So where was I? So Mexican Americans, like African Americans, have been excluded from and or objectified by discourses of science, and we are also generally associated more with a primitive and racialized past than we are with a technologically enhanced future. Yet new technologies have transformed Mexican Americans just as much as they have transformed African Americans, and they have enabled us to articulate, that is, to enunciate and link past, present, and future identities. Drawing from Nelson's definition of Afrofuturism, I define Chicana futurism as Chicano cultural production, art, literature, etc., that attends to cultural transformations resulting from new and everyday technologies, including their detritus, that excavates and creates original narratives of identity, technology, and the future, that offers critiques of the promises of science and technology, and that redefines humanism and or the human. Martinez's work does not privilege science and reason over religion and spirituality. Instead, it merges them and thus offers an ontological and epistemological alternative to that of the Enlightenment, that is, rational subject. Moreover, while Afrofuturism reflects diasporic experience, Chicana futurism articulates colonial and post-colonial histories. By linking New Mexico's Indo-Hispanic traditions, that is, the Santo tradition and the Matachines ritual, and its current role as a repository for high-tech trash, Martinez's work accomplishes this. Additionally, it comments on the ways in which technology, from Los Alamos National Laboratory in its entirety to a single computer chip, has transformed Hispanas and Hispana cultural identity. In recounting the social, cultural, and economic changes that her family and community underwent as a result of the expansion of the lab during the second half of the 20th century, Martinez remarked that technology forces a people to alter its ways. At the same time, she pointed out, technology and, quote, its remnants can be the vehicle for holding on to who we are, unquote. Now, technology possesses a dual function. It preserves at the same time that it mediates or distorts post-colonial identities and cultural traditions. In many ways, Martinez's work uses technology to preserve the Santo tradition. If it deviated too far from this tradition, that is, if Martinez produced pieces that were not identifiable Santos or were not sufficiently Santo-like, she might not sell as many as she has. Martinez earns enough money selling her art to work as a full-time artist, which is very remarkable in the United States. At the same time, her work alters the Santo tradition and shows us how technology and its remnants transform ethnic and post-colonial identities and cultural traditions by enabling us to enunciate the who we are of the past, or the who we are that we of the present imagined ourselves to be in the past, through the tools of the present. However, Martinez's work begs the questions, it begs important questions for post-colonial peoples, such as, where does the who we are of the past sever from or blend into the who we are of the present and future? That is, when do we stop being us and become something or someone else? And when we become something or someone else, do we become them? In short, where do the boundaries of culture and identity lie? Are we still Hispanic if we no longer make tortillas by hand, or if we never made tortillas by hand? Are we still Hispanic if we work at a computer rather than at a spinning wheel? If we alter, drift from, or repudiate Roman Catholicism to shape our own feminist and universalist spirituality, which is what Martinez has done. Such queries are difficult, if not impossible, to answer. Still, clues to their answers may be found in the hybrid cultural products and practices that men and women have actively created and enacted over time, such as Santos and the Matachines ritual. These syncretic products and practices underscore the resilience and malleability of culture and cultural identity and reveal the simultaneity as opposed to linearity of past, present, and future. Above all, they pose new questions, such as, what does change mean and to whom? Who benefits and who loses with change? Which changes do we struggle against and mourn, and which do we celebrate and embrace? Martinez strategically retains and redefines aspects of the old and embraces the new to forge what she sees as an affirming cultural identity for mestizos, hispanos, indio-hispanos. Her work preserves what she sees as the beauty of an Indo-Hispanic ancestral past, its Catholic icons and rituals, while offering new meanings for them. In ascribing new meanings to these long-standing forms and practices, Martinez inserts what is generally regarded as the archaic and or the primitive into present and future technocultures. New Mexico's Hispanos have been excluded not only from the present by being viewed and or described as primitive villagers, they have been eliminated from its future as well. Writing about Afrofuturism, Alondra Nelson asserts that the technologically enabled future is by its very nature unmoored from the past and from people of color. That is, if science and technology have been racialized white, and if they are also associated with the future, then the future does not include people of color. And in the US, New Mexico's Hispanos, like Latinos in general, are considered people of color. Martinez's work claims both the present and future for people of color, specifically Hispanas, as it merges New Mexico's narratives of ethnic identity and folk art with its history of scientific research and environmental destruction. However, like the copper and nickel in her wall hangings and sculptures, the present and future may sparkle, but they are far from unproblematic. Her luminous pieces illustrate the beauty of change, but they do not naively celebrate it, for they offer a critique of technology's detrimental impact on the environment. In short, Martinez's work, like the controversy surrounding Alma Lopez's Our Lady, reminds us that for someone somewhere, change comes at a cost and often with struggle. So at this point, I would like to, as I wrap up, I'd like to return to, Alma Lopez's Our Lady. Okay. Although much of the criticism directed at Cyber Arte and Our Lady was very sexist and homophobic, Alma Lopez, by the way, is an out lesbian. Some of the criticism revealed anxiety over very real demographic and economic changes in northern New Mexico, in particular Santa Fe. For example, an Albuquerque newspaper reported that Our Lady upset some native New Mexicans. And by native New Mexicans is referring to the Hispanos as opposed to the Anglos, the white people. Because, quote, this is a quote from the paper, like their ancestors who saw the land taken by invasion by the Americans, they now are seeing Santa Fe invaded again by coastal elites followed by Starbucks and skyrocketing real estate prices, unquote. Coastal elites, I think, refers to wealthy people from the West Coast, from California, who've gone to New Mexico and purchased land and built mansions and then hired the local people, the New Mexicans, to work as their gardeners, as their servants, and so on. Additionally, the newspaper quoted post-protesters at a march who said that they were, quote, sick of newcomers disrespecting their culture, unquote. Clearly, criticism of Our Lady and Cyber Arte stemmed not only from outrage, but from injury and anxiety. This anxiety was about much more than what the Virgin of Guadalupe really looks like. Rather, it concerned the changing roles of women in Mexican and Mexican-American culture, access to public space in state institutions, in the Museum of New Mexico in particular, and the impact on New Mexico of the homogenizing forces of globalization, the impact of globalization and development on New Mexico, for which Starbucks has become a symbol. While I do not feel that they were justified in demanding the removal of Our Lady, I wish to stress that many New Mexican Catholic Hispanos criticized Lopez and her work because they felt that their culture was under siege. In response, they attempted to ascribe a single monolithic meaning to Our Lady of Guadalupe, a complex polysemic sign born of social and cultural transition. Our Lady of Guadalupe was born of the encounter of Spaniards and Indians in Mexico. What's more, these Hispanos in New Mexico delineated a rigid, narrow, and static definition of Hispano cultural identity. This cultural identity was oppositional vis-a-vis the state, as represented by the Museum of International Folk Art and the Museum of New Mexico, both are state institutions, and the metropolis, as represented by Lopez, the so-called California artists. And here I'm using metropolis in the colonial, post-colonial sense. However, these protesters denied the diversity among women who self-identify as Chicana, Hispana, and Latina. And again, I'm using all these terms because all these terms were used in the debate concerning Our Lady. By conflating these terms with Roman Catholicism, with subservience, and with heterosexuality, if not asexuality. So the critics of Lopez's Our Lady said, if you're really Hispana, then you will be Catholic, then you will be demure, you will be obedient to men. If you are feminist, then you are no longer Hispana. If you are not Catholic, then you can't possibly be Hispana. So they attempted to define Hispana very rigidly, very narrowly. In their effort to adhere to a conservative brand of Catholicism, many of Lopez's Hispano critics tenaciously clung to an image of themselves that bore an uncanny resemblance to the stereotypes and caricatures that the dominant culture, including New Mexico's tourism industry, has imposed upon them for many years. While they embraced and defended what might be described as a traditionalist cultural identity, they also locked themselves in an imaginary, impossibly unchanging path. Both Our Lady and Martinez's Chicana Futurist art demonstrate the significance, value, price, and necessity of change. Lopez's more so in terms of subject matter, Martinez's via the materials used. Martinez's work turns to the past by taking its inspiration from traditional forms and practices. At the same time, it looks to the present by locating such forms and practices in the technologies of the information age. And it dares to imagine new ways of being for the future, at which it takes a good hard look by confronting the growing problem of the disposal of technoculture's garbage. Via technology, Martinez blurs New Mexico's competing narratives, the narrative of Los Alamos and environmental destruction, and the narrative of the so-called land of enchantment, of the beautiful rivers and mountains and clean air and so on. It also rejects hackneyed and nostalgic visions of the so-called land of enchantment and its Hispanic residents. It expresses and transforms Indo-Hispanic traditions and spirituality. And finally, it underscores the malleability, dynamism, and width of Hispana cultural identity in the 21st century. Thank you. Muchas gracias.